weather is frightening, the thunder and lightning seem to be having their way. But as far as I'm concerned, it's a lovely day.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Awards Don't Matter, the podcast that takes a look at all the Best Picture winners and nominees throughout history and asks, does this matter? My name is Andrew, and I'm joined by my co-host Dave to talk about a new film. Well, it's not a new film. Jeez, why did I say it's a new film?
You know, it's new to us. It was new to me. I had never seen it before we were set to record this, but it's one of our episodes that is about a loser. A movie that did not win Best Picture at the Oscars. Struck down by Captain Bligh and Mutiny on the Bounty. Such a shame.
Yeah, and that is Mark Sandrich's top hat.
The turn in the weather will keep us together, so I can honestly say that as far as I'm concerned, it's a lovely day. And everything's okay. This a lovely day to be caught in the rain.
This is a Ginger Rogers and Fred Astaire film. It's a musical that is about, basically, it's a film that should have technically been wrapped up in a couple of quick lines of dialogue, but no, they stretch it out for 90 minutes so.
Is that your top hat? Is that your briefcase? No? Oh, okay.
Okay.
That's it.
But darn it, there has to be a film here. There has to be some singing. There has to be some dancing. This is a film that, look, I'm just going to read the Wikipedia description because it's a little bit confusing. So American dancer Jerry Travis, Fred Astaire, comes to London to star in a show produced by Bumbling Horace. While practicing a tap dance routine in his hotel bedroom, he awakes Dale Tremont, Ginger Rogers, on the floor below. She storms upstairs to complain, whereupon Jerry falls hopelessly in love with her and proceeds to pursue her all over London. That sounds creepier than it is. Dale mistakes Jerry for Horace, who is married to her friend Madge, Helen Broderick. Following the success of Jerry's opening night in London, Jerry follows Dale to Venice, where she is visiting Madge and modeling and promoting gowns created by Bedini. Eric Rhodes, a dandified Italian, I would never have said that word, fashion designer with a penchant for malapropriums. Again, I wouldn't have said that either. Jerry proposes to Dale, who, while still believing Jerry is Horace, is disgusted that her friend's behavior could behave her in such a terrible manner and agrees to instead to marry Bedini. Fortunately enough, Bates, who is Horace's meddling English valet, disguises himself as a priest and conducts a ceremony. Horace had sent Bates to keep tabs on Dale. On a trip to a gondola, Jerry manages to convince Dale, and they return to a hotel where the previous confusion is rapidly cleared up again. As we're saying, could have been done in quick sentence, and the reconciled couple dance off in the Venetian sunset to the tune of the Piccolino. Part of the reason why I chose this film...
Take a breath. That's a lot. Take a deep breath.
There's a lot of singing, a lot of dancing in this film. Again, as I said at the end of the last episode, part of the reason I chose Top Hat was because you had already discussed The Informer on a different podcast, and I thought that I'd give you a break from talking about John Ford. And I love this film. I grew up watching it. I think that is a really wonderful film, and it's kind of a film that is known because of its songs, Top Hat, White Tie and Tails, and Cheek to Cheek, which Cheek to Cheek has been featured in a whole bunch of different films, Purple Rose of Cairo, fellow Best Picture nominee and failure to win, The Green Mile. That film was nominated for Best Picture. It has an impact on cinema history. This is your first time coming to it. Did you like it?
I am loath to make you happy, Andrew, but not only is this a good movie, this should have won the Oscar.
It should have. Really should have.
It should have. It is so pleasant, so lovely. I loved every second of this movie. Like, even though they're racist towards Italians, and I myself am Italian, for people who don't know, my last name is Giannini. So you can't avoid the Italian in that name.
For people who are listening the hand go up with the mama.
You know what? I didn't even do it on purpose. It just comes out. You're right, of course, that like a lot of the misunderstandings in this movie could be hand-waved away with one conversation between two of our characters. But that's like, that's every great romance. Not even romantic comedy, not even romantic musical comedy. I mean, like, fucking Romeo and Juliet could be cleared up with two people talking to one another instead of taking poison and stabbing themselves. Just like Top Hat. No difference there. But, you know, of course, Astaire and Rogers together are great. I'm like half serious about this, because I've made this joke on other podcasts that, like, in comparison to Ginger Rogers, Fred Astaire is an uggo. Like, he has no business breathing the same air as the deified angel that is Ginger Rogers. Like, you look at her, I'm just like, I look at her and I'm like, oh my God. Like, no wonder, like, granted, acting, dancing, amazing. But, like, God, she is just beautiful to look at. Like, just an absolutely stunning woman. And you pair that with someone who can do the comedy as well, and it's like, oh my God, you were just like too gifted for this world. So seeing them together romantically is a little, puts me off a little bit. But when the singing and dancing starts, there's nobody better. He's Fred Astaire. I mean, the name is synonymous with dance, and there's an absolute good reason for it. And they're like, you know, they're meet cute in here where he's tap dancing and, like, you know, they meet and, you know, he's like, well, I have an affliction. I need you to hold me. And then, you know, her kind of, you know, sniping back, like, well, I'll get this big burly guy downstairs. He can hold you. And I'm like, this is like, I even take out the singing and dancing, these two together, like, there's magic on screen. Absolutely, immediately. And even if you take a look at the scenes that she has with Madge, like when she first says, like, oh, he's been chasing me all across this place. And, you know, of course, there's this misunderstanding, but the wife is like, wow, I'm impressed. Like, good for him. That's fine. You know? And it's just like such a good-natured, until it's not, it's such a good-natured relationship between the husband and the wife when they're not on screen together, which I find really interesting that once they're on screen together, because everything has come to a head, they're like at each other's throats. But before that, you can see how good their relationship is. Like, you absolutely understand it. Like, she knows he's a flirt, but knows he wouldn't do anything, so it's fine.
Yeah.
No big deal.
Knows that he's completely incapable of actually, you know, securing or sealing the deal with any other person. But you also understand why she would, like, I think what I've grown to appreciate and understand through watching these films from the 1920s and 30s is how the distance in relationships that people have. Especially because Madge nicks off down to Venice and she's down there and Horace is, like, you know, doing his own thing in a completely different area. And I think there is if there's something for relationships and partners to learn from these kinds of films, is that, you know, spending time apart from each other is actually quite healthy and organic. And you should definitely, you know, it should be encouraged that, oh, you want to go on a holiday? Well, I don't particularly want to go to Venice. You go to Venice, have a great time. I'll see you when you get back. That kind of thing. And I like that kind of organic nature to that relationship. And as you're saying, they work so well when they're off screen and then they're at each other's throats when they're together. But the film isn't about them. It's about Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers. And I want to talk about that beauty of Ginger Rogers again, as you're saying, because when they're in flow, when they're dancing, you know, we early on, we get to see, I love the gradual reveal of Jerry's dancing as well, where, you know, I forgot that the first time that he dances, it's behind a table. And I'm like, oh, this is Broadway Melody all over again, isn't it? I know.
Yeah, all over again. Like, I had that thought too. And I was like, I was legitimately, like, in that moment, I have to tell you, so angry at you.
What? Well, they always have a little scheme. Look here, young fellow, I think it's about time you found out for yourself.
Oh, you do?
I certainly do.
No thanks, Horace. In me, you see a youth who is completely on the loose. No ends, no yearnings, no strings, no connections, no ties to my affections. I'm fancy free and free for anything fancy. No dates can't be broken, no words that can't be spoken, especially when I am feeling romancy. Like Robin upon a tree, like sailor goes to sea, like an unwritten melody, I'm free, that's me. So bring on the big attraction. My decks are cleared for action. I'm fancy free, free for anything. Fancy.
Andrew's like, this is such a good movie. It's so great. And it starts off with the footwork being hidden. And I'm like, again? We're doing this again? I'm going to lose my mind. But luckily, after that, the numbers get bigger and bolder, and it's fine.
But that's it. It's
yeah,
like,
that first one is wrong.
It's taking that line from the jazz singer, you ain't seen nothing yet, to be like, all right, we're going to give you the audio and the visual of his face dancing, and we're going to give you the audio of his foot tapping, and then you're just going to have to imagine it happening, and we're going to allow you to create that image, and then when you see it actually happening, you're going to be like, wow. And I think this is one of the rare occasions where it's like, in a musical where people just organically break out in singing and dancing, there is a reason for him to break out singing and dancing. It feels normal that he would, you know, start tap dancing, that he would start singing and serenading his friends and lovers and everybody that's around. Like, it doesn't feel like this is some dickhead just like, oh, shut up, you know?
Stop it.
Yeah. And while Dale is very much like, look, I'm trying to sleep down here, there is still, he wins her over. And there is an affable charm to him that comes through in his personality, right, that is just accentuated by their dancing together. And gosh.
He better be charming because he's not good looking. He better be charming.
But oh, he can move. He can move. And that's like, this film, Cheek to Cheek, is referenced in La La Land. And, you know, I couldn't help but think about that film so much while watching this and being like, geez, remember when actors could sing and dance? Like,
yeah, you know? Yeah.
I don't mean to rag on La La Land. I know it's got its fans, but you know, at least they could have done is actually employed some people who could do one of either thing. And alas, you know.
Okay, so yeah. but here's the problem. Here's the problem with that. I think you're right in one way, is that like, being an actor used to have to use a, you know, sports analogy, and you won't get this because it's baseball. It's not like Australian rules football or rugby or whatever nonsense
cricket,
you want.
Cricket,
but,
we play cricket.
Yeah. Oh, God, whatever. In baseball, there's an idea of a five-tool player, which means shortly means they can do everything really, really well, right? And that's what it used to take to be a big actor. You used to be able to have to sing, dance, do comedy, do drama. Like, you have to do everything and do it really well. And now it's much more about, you know, celebrity and star power. Like, and you have Gosling and Stone, who had been in movies together before. So they work as a romantic couple. And you're like, okay, this will work. And they're like, oh, yeah, but they can't. They can dance okay. They can carry a tune, but they're not singers, right? And you had, you know, you had similar things like this. And, you know, they did a film version of Les Mis, and for some god-awful reason, cast Russell Crowe, who, like, I can't sing, but Russell Crowe really can't sing. Like, it's rough. It's really rough to watch. So they've been doing this for, like, I don't know, probably the last decade or so, where it's just like, well, you recognize that person, so you'll be more forgiving. But this movie, you don't have that problem because you have people who are stars and also have all these skills. Like, that sequence where she's caught out in the rain and he, like, you know, comes to, like, pick her up or whatever, and he's, like, you know, dancing in the gazebo.
I can see the sun up high, though we're caught in a storm. I can see where you and I could be cozy and warm. Let the rain pitter-patter, but it really doesn't matter if the skies are gray. Long as I can be with you, it's a lovely day.
Like, not only is that a beautifully choreographed scene, but her acting in that scene is tremendous. Like, it's like seeing the entire arc of a relationship. You actually see her on her face. You see her being wooed by this man. And you see her catching herself more than once of like, okay, stop. I have a nice life set up. I need to, you know, do all these things. I've got this guy back here who's going to give me all these clothes. I'm going to live a good life. I need to, you know, and I'm going to hopefully be in the show. I've got to do this. But you see her being tempted in that sequence. And it really, really works. And I don't think, you know, not to rag on him, but I don't think it works because of him. Like, the dancing is, of course, top-notch and perfect. But it works because of her reactions. I mean, there's that kind of old line, like, everything that Fred Astaire did, Ginger Rogers did backwards and in heels. And that's, you know, true physically, but also, like, if you watch her as an actor, like, it's kind of a masterclass, especially in this type of movie, where, honestly, like, you didn't have to do all that. You didn't have to be that good. Like, it's a feel-good romance with singing and dancing and Irving Berlin music and, like, giant numbers, and people are going to be wowed by this anyway. It's going to be beautiful. But, like, she really brought her A-game to this. I've actually, four podcasts, I think I've watched, like, four of her movies recently, and she's always good, but she is great in Top Hat. Like, just pitch perfect.
She really is. And one of the things which we forgot to mention about Mutiny on the Bounty was that it, you know, in for the 8th Academy Awards, it was the last time that there was just a Best Actor and Best Actress award, because three of the lead actors were nominated for Best Actor, which helped create the Supporting Actress and Supporting Actor award. And neither Fred Astaire or Ginger Rogers were nominated for their acting here, which I think is a genuine shame, because...
You
know,
I do too.
They're full body performances. You know, as you're saying, they're so effortless and so talented that they act through their dancing, they act through their singing, and they act through, and they embody it so perfectly. I wish that they were nominated. But it's really a cruel shame as well that this film didn't win anything at all. It was nominated for Best Song. Cheek to Cheek was nominated for Best Song. It lost to Lullaby of Broadway for the Gold Diggers of 1935. That classic song. I know we can't,
that's
we can't
be,
escape it.
Like, that's so that's one of those things looking back. Like, you know, granted, nobody really looks back this far, but there's always all these articles about the, you know, the biggest Oscar misses of all time. Like, this one instead of this, like, this has got to be number one. Like, this, like, Cheek to Cheek, like, as you mentioned, it's been used in, like, five or six movies, you know, as recently as, you know, 5 years ago. This has stood the test of time. And, like, just listening to it and watching it here, it's a great song. It's like, this is exactly what you want from an Oscar song, right? And they just missed it, man, for a song that no one has thought about probably since 1950. Like, no one has ever gone back and been like, well, let me check out the... I mean, there's always some idiot Oscar blogger who's like, let me listen to every song that ever won, you know,
Well, it's certainly song, easier than watching the bloody films
they're
they come from.
Yeah, they're weak. No... Come on now, do the work, really. Don't just listen to a 3-minute song. But yeah, man, I mean, as I mentioned, I really, there is a big part of me that I watch and like, man, I hope I fucking hate this. I just want to rub it. I just want to rub it in Andrew's face that this movie he loves is a piece of garbage. Like, I can't wait. And then, like, I swear to God, within like 3 minutes, I'm like, oh, God damn it. Like, this is so good. And it's just like, and you just knew it was going to get better and better and better. Like, it's good even just like, even before Ginger Rogers shows up, the relationship between the two guys, it's super fun, it's super enjoyable. And then when she shows up, it just gets great. And then, you know, the numbers get bigger and bigger and longer and longer. And like, if you're not like a fan of musicals, that might be the dividing line, that might be the thing where it loses you, because there's some lengthy musical numbers here. But man, it is so, I just can't think of words to describe it other than like lovely and charming. Like, I just had a smile on my face the entire runtime. There's not a dull moment for me. There's not a moment where I'm like, ugh, I don't like that. Like, even the Italian stuff, it's funny. That stuff is funny. And, you know, they mentioned in the description all the malapropisms. Like, he just can't hold the language in his head, and he gets everything wrong. And so even when he's being threatening, he's funny. Like, it just, man, this movie just works 100% of the time.
Yeah. In our discussion of another musical, 42nd Street, you know, we talked about needing the kind of the calm, the positive films, especially in this time. And I forgot how much I needed Top Hat when I was watching it. It's been a good 15 years since I last saw it. And so when I get to that cheek to cheek scene, I wept. I just sat there weeping, because it is such a beautiful, uplifting moment, and it is such a pure moment as well. And the cinematography, just, you know, the head to toes capturing all of their dancing, and it just embraces their dancing in that gazebo so perfectly. And when they step out into the rain and come back and all this, this organic flow of just two people falling in love is so charming and so nice and so sweet. I think while this is not a perfect film, because again, like it's got, I can't escape the narrative kind of, geez, if only you just say, I'm not the guy that you think I am, this would have all been solved. I can't escape that, even though I probably should do, because it's, otherwise this film wouldn't exist. But I love that moment. I think it is easily one of the purest moments in cinema history.
Heaven, I'm in heaven, and my heart beats so that I can hardly speak, and I seem to find the happiness I seek when we're out together dancing cheek to cheek.
It is easily just a simply divine moment of film, and I'm glad that it exists because it's beautiful. And I think that even if you're not a musical fan, you're going to love this film because it does, it's so honest and so earnest and so just eager to be like, here, have something nice. Enjoy this.
Right.
Just chill out for 90 minutes and enjoy two people falling in love. That's enough.
Right. Yeah. And here's something, like, is this movie available on physical media? Is this like...
No.
Because like I was looking it up, and I don't think you can.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that is a shame, because I was like, every once in a while, I'll watch a movie for a podcast. It doesn't happen very often, but every once in a while, I'll watch a movie for a podcast and be like, you know what? I need to own that. I want to come back to that. Like, I want more than a digital copy. I want to hold that in my hand. And I looked, and I like couldn't find it anywhere. And I was like, this is a Oscar-nominated film. Like, we've talked at length in other shows about like films that literally have disappeared. Like, there are no... That's not the case. I'm sure someone will, you know, do a redo of this, you know, the Criterion will get a hold of it or something. They did Swing Time. Why wouldn't they do Top Hat? That'd be fine. But that's a shame. Like that this, like, it's like this, you know, it's just this little ounce of happiness. It's like hour and 40 minutes of just pure, genuine gold. And like, you can't access it. And that's shitty, man. Like, this should be available. And like, you know, I don't know what the reasons are for it, like how many copies you have to sell to make it worth it. But like, man, one of these boutique labels should really, you know, pick up the Ginger Rogers Fred Astaire collection and just put them all out. Cause it's, you know, like, are they all basically the same? Kind of, yes. But like, are they all differently enjoyable? Also, yes. Like, and this is, I think I've seen like four or five of them now, and this is my favorite one, and it's not closed. Like, this is just so wonderful. I could see myself putting this on, like, not only to watch again, but just in the background. Like, it's just kind of a nice, warm presence to just have on your screen. It's so great.
Yeah, and it sounds lovely. You know, it just sounds absolutely wonderful and enjoyable, and it's charming. And yeah, like, it feels reductive to say, oh, it's just a really nice film. But not all films need to be critically dissected. And I think that's the thing, you know, coming back to the whole purpose of this show is talking about the Best Picture nominees and winners. And, you know, like Grand Hotel in a way, and I guess to an extent what they were probably aiming for was something like The Broadway Melody. Sometimes it's just, we need a nice film, and they failed with The Broadway Melody because that's a terrible film, but I get what they were going for with this. You know, I get what they were going for, and I wish that a film like this was held up. You know, I guess one of the things which I realize with something like Top Hat is that this is probably one of the best arguments for holding the Oscars maybe a year or two after the actual films have come out. Because I'm certain, while I really appreciate Mutiny on a Bounty, I'm glad that I watched it. And it's a great Best Picture winner. It will, when all is said and done, and we complete watching all of these films and stuff like that, it'll probably sit somewhere around the midway mark, I imagine, looking at the films coming forward. And that's fine. You know, there are going to be over 100 films winning Best Picture. However, I do think that if there was given a year or two breathing space, that they would be able to look at a film like Top Hat and go, no, this is the best film of that year. this is the best film. Because I think we would be able to avoid so many problems if they were able to just have like a year or two and go, maybe Green Book is not the best.
Maybe not Crash.
Maybe not Crash. Right.
Yeah.
Maybe not Driving Miss Daisy. Yeah.
Jesus. Yeah, that one hurts. And I think this movie also brings to mind, like, you know, you talk about like ranking movies and like, is this as good as blank, right? And I think there's such a difference between a 5-star musical romance and a 5-star Mutiny on the Bounty, right? I think, and I'm not saying Mutiny on the Bounty is 5 stars necessarily, but they're very different movies. And I will say that maybe more than any movie we have covered on here, Top Hat does exactly what it wants to. It achieves absolutely everything it sets out to. Like, you can say, like, oh, well, it's just a misunderstanding, and if they should have just talked to one another. But, you know, they talk to one another, there's no movie, right? So you have to, at some point, you have to, like, move past that. But, like, if you're looking, like, this movie is looking to make people happy, to entertain them on every level. And, like, I can't imagine watching this and finding it wanting. Like, this is, and... You know, I think the Oscars in general, maybe not so much at this time, but certainly moving forward, you know, Oscars don't like fun stuff. They don't like comedies. They don't like people being happy. Like, someone's got to die, and it's got to be dour, and it's got to be huge. There's got to be spectacle, but not spectacle in the musical way, but spectacle in the, like, the giant battle sequences or whatever, you know? And it's like... I do find myself, like, Golden Globes suck, obviously. It's just, it's a complete sham, and it's like, who can we get who's a big star who will get drunk at our event? Who can we get? But I like the idea of having a separate award for drama and comedy, because, I mean, I'd love it if comedies would just get awarded, especially because if you talk to any actor, they're always like, comedy's hard, drama's easy, comedy is rough, and yet it's so disrespected when it comes to awards time. Like, when was the last time a comedy got Oscar love? Like, Fish Wanda? Like, that was maybe the last big win for a comedic performance.
Well, I mean, Bridesmaids kind of broke through with Melissa McCarthy, and that helped secure her a good career. That was always
but
the
surprise. But it didn't win, right?
It didn't win. It got nominated for Best Screenplay and Best Supporting Actress, and that in itself was like, that's your award right there.
Shocking. Right.
But again, like, Tiffany Haddish should have been nominated for Girls Trip, you know, but as crass as that film is, she has such a wonderful, beautiful relationship in that film, and the manner that she shares the bond with
And they
friends.
Set out to make it crass. That's a feature, not a bug. Like, yeah, it's crass, but that's the movie they were making. And this is my point, is that I think sometimes we should reward movies that set out to make the exact movie that they're making. Like, why is, you know, and we're talking extreme examples here, right? Why is a movie like Schindler's List any more valuable than a movie like Fish Called Wanda? Fish Called Wanda does everything it sets out to do. It's a 5-star comedy. Schindler's List does everything, sets out to do a bunch of things, and does them all really well. It is a 5-star drama tragedy. Right? Why is that one more worthy of our attention than something that made you laugh? It's something that gave you joy. Like, you don't have to cry every time you see a movie. It doesn't have to be the end of the world. I mean, you cried because it was joyful, but that's beside the point. Like, you can just be filled with light and joy and that be a great movie. It doesn't have to, like, ruin your day to be a good movie.
Well,
that's all.
Exactly. Yeah. And like, one of the notes which I always like to mention to people about the year that Titanic won was that, you know, Titanic was up against LA Confidential. It was up against As Good As It Gets. It was up against Good Will Hunting, I think it was. And then the other film, like, I want to see the alternate universe where The Full Monty won Best Picture. Mm-hmm. And that film, I think we can laugh at it now. And, you know, I'm keen to revisit that down the line, but we can laugh at it now. But that film was a massive success because it made people feel good. It was, you know, long before Magic Mike and all this kind of stuff, there was something that was really amusing about seeing a bunch of blokes stripping. And, you know, that's nice. Like, it's good to see that kind of thing succeed. It was never going to beat Titanic, of course, but
nothing was.
I just wish that
it's beside your point, but LA Confidential to me is one of the best movies of the last 50 years. So like that one still stings. Even though I like Titanic, I think Titanic is really good. It's a brilliant melodrama like that. And again, that's what it was designed to be. You know, big effects, big love story, all that stuff. But like LA Confidential is so good. Although hard to watch now because, you know, Kevin Spacey is a monster. But but yeah, it would be great to live in that universe where, I mean, even though I love L.A. Confidential, I would love to live in a world where the full Monty won. Because that movie is charming as hell. It's so fun. Again, haven't seen it in like a decade, so who knows how it holds up. But I remember like walking out of that theater going like, man, that was a good time. And like, there's not enough movies like that that get rewarded.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, as we wrap up, one of the things, like, as we were saying, there's 12 Best Picture nominees this year, 12 of them. And they find space to put a film like Top Hat. And, you know, in modern day, as the Academy is, you know, from next year, it will be a permanent 10 Best Picture nominees. And it's like, do every single one of them have to be dark and foreboding or about something or correcting social injustices and stuff like that? And while it's nice that we do get a bunch of films that, you know, talk about the time we live in and the inequality and racism and stuff like that, they're a dime a dozen. And I'm not trying to discount films that are about that. You know, they are vitally important, of course, but they're almost all that we get to celebrate nowadays. And it's just echoing what you're saying in the sense that why aren't comedies rewarded? Why isn't something like Palm Springs recognized? What, you know, that kind of stuff. It's a genuine shame.
And like, I think a part of the answer to that is the Academy itself, right? It's a self-perpetuating monster, right? Is that like, oh, well, we really need these important films. So those are the films that get greenlit. Those are the films that go to festivals. And those are the films that get rewarded by the critics and get rewarded by, you know, the Gold Globes or whoever. And it just continues. Shit rolls downhill, man. And it's just like, here we are at the Oscars again with like three movies about racism, two movies about misogyny. Every once in a while, we get like one crowd pleaser in there. It's like the Dark Knight rule, right? We get that one where it's like, oh, a movie someone has seen outside of critic circles. That's nice. And it's always so rare. I mean, so it's like, yeah. So it's like, it's hard to kind of tease apart like where, like, do I need to watch another movie like 12 Years a Slave, which is a great movie. It's a great film. But like you said, every year there's like five movies about that. And usually four of them are terrible, but like you just never know which one's going to capture the imagination. Like I think Green Book is terrible, but that still, you know, made it all the way and won a bunch of Oscars. And I was like, here we are again. God forbid, you know, we would reward, or even like not even just comedies, but just like, you know, movies that are genuine. Like, I mean, you know, and anyone who has listened to me for more than one episode knows I'm a huge fan of Brooklyn. I think that's one of the best movies of that decade. And yes, it got nominated for some Oscars and that was really nice, but that's the type of movie I would love to see get rewarded. Like something that is just so genuine in what it is and doesn't try to be too cool. Right? It doesn't try to distance itself from being a story about, like, a simple story about love and family. Go! You know? And we don't reward those enough, but, like, you know, you crash a giant ship into a piece of ice and then give it all the Oscars, guys. Like, Jesus. Move on.
I do want to mention as well, just briefly, that the Green Book did win at the Golden Globes for Best Motion Picture Musical or Comedy. So, you know, they find that racism. It's hilarious.
Yeah. Well, I mean, didn't The Martian get nominated for comedy? I mean, it's the Globes are just known for just like doing whatever. Like, I think it's like one guy in a room just like trolling the world. Like, I know what I'll do this time. Yeah, Matt Damon for comedy in The Martian. Ha! And that's all. Just every year. I mean, Jared Leto getting nominated this year. I mean, there's all sorts of nonsense that happens. You know, you can't trust the Globes. Just like, who can we get who is pretty and they might get drunk at our show and cause a scene?
Exactly.
Bring them on in.
That's why we're discussing the Oscars. So yeah, that is Top Hat, which again, if you haven't seen it, it doesn't matter if you know the plot of it, because it's all about joy and happiness and delight. I hope that you do manage to seek it out in some some way, and I hope that somebody down the line releases a proper copy of it, because it deserves a revival, especially given everything we're talking about.
You know why they should? You know why they should?
What's that?
Because Top Hat matters, Andrew. It matters.
It does matter. It does matter. I want to hold my head in my hands and go, oh, but, you know, it is the title of the show. It is the title of the show.
That's right. This is your fault. You came up with it.
But it's why we highlight these films as well, because we want to show that, you know, Oscar or not, they matter and they're important. And that's what matters. Follow us on social media. Awards Don't Matter on all of the social places. Dave, where can people find you and tell us about your new show that you're doing?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter way too often at Darn That Dave. You can also follow my new podcast with old co-host Michael Denniston called Offscreen Death, where I make him watch really fancy movies off of best of lists, and he makes me watch erotic thrillers like Unfaithful. And that is Offscreen Death, and our Twitter is very easy to remember if you remember the name of the show. It's also at Offscreen Death, so be sure to follow us there and listen there for more of my nonsense. I promise to try and use less puns. I am sorry.
I don't think you are, and if you want to follow me, head over to the Curb
AU. How dare
and follow me for all things Australian nonsense. Alright, we'll see you on the next episode. Bye.
Venetian sons and daughters are strumming a new tune upon their guitar. It was written by a Latin, a gondolier who sat in his home out in Brooklyn and gazed at the stars. He sent his melody across the sea to Italy, and we know they wrote some words to fit that catchy bit and christened it the Piccolino. And we know that it's the reason why everyone this season is humming and strumming a new melody.